Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Listen to them. Children of the night. What music they make.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
You wouldn't be able to do these awful things to me if I weren't still in this chair.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
Who's in the box?
Put the gun down, baby.
Oh, what's in the box?
Wolves have a territorial range of about 300 miles and a kill range of 30. If we're close to their den, and if we're within that radius, then they'll come after us.
How can we tell if we're close?
We can't.
What in God's name are you talking about?
Your son, Mr. Thorne. The son of the devil.
You're insane.
He must die, Mr. Thorne!
You do not want to go that way.
What's that way?
Officer, sir, you do not want to go that way. We're going to the mall.
Hello, Dexter Morgan.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am your co-host tonight, Philip from the state of New Hampshire, and I am alone tonight because I attended the convention Rock and Shock in Worcester, Massachusetts, and I have a few interviews from a few folks that I thought would be something that listeners of Dark Discussions would be curious to hear and would be interested to hear. However, I do know some people aren't very fond of the convention interview episodes, so I decided to basically make this episode its own standalone episode without causing any issues with the regular release of other episodes of Dark Discussion. So folks such as Michelle Barkley, I know, aren't necessarily a fan of these type of shows. So don't worry, the regular episodes will continue unhindered. Now, the thing is that Rock and Shock is a horror convention, like I said, Worcester, Massachusetts, near Halloween every year, and this year, October 18th through the 20th on 2013. This is a convention that they have at the DCU Center, which is this large place where they play hockey. It's basically a giant convention center, or even a stadium, to be honest, indoor stadium. So I was able to attend. I showed up on October 19th, which was the Saturday. The other 2 days I unfortunately weren't able to make because of the fact that my wife is 8 months pregnant, so I only had so much time that I really was able to attend and be away from home. Now, this was the 10th anniversary of Rock and Shock. It's been around now since 2003, which is actually pretty impressive because you figure it must be expensive to rent the center itself, the DCU Center. Never mind bringing in all the guests and all those other expenses that have to occur. Now, this year, the convention was absolutely huge. And the reason for that is they had a couple of really big headliners. The first is Robert Englund, which everybody knows for a number of things, Nightmare on Elm Street specifically. And he has a huge fan base, as we all know. But also this year, they had Michael Rooker. And Michael Rooker, known for The Walking Dead and Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, among other films, Slither is another one. He actually was able to attend, and he had a huge crowd to come to see him. Now, other folks that were there were Robert Patrick, Scott Wilson, Gunnar Hansen. Robert Patrick, obviously everybody knows from Terminator 2 and The X-Files, among other films. Copland, he was in a number of other films as well. Scott Wilson from The Walking Dead, Gunnar Hansen, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Also, this year, they had the cast of Holliston, which is a Fear.net sitcom that Adam Green produces, and that had a large, large fan base that showed up, pictures and autographs of the cast. Also, Jason Mewes and Brian O'Halloran from Clerks and Mallrats were there. Kane Hodder, who plays Jason, was there. Jordan Ladd, Serena Vincent, and Joey Kern from Cabin Fever were there. Also, Sid Haig, William Forsythe, a number of people. It was really, really large, large celebrity base they had this year, including a number of other folks from The Walking Dead besides Michael Rooker and Scott Wilson. Now, I was able to meet a few folks. I actually bought a book from Jack Ketchum. I had never read his novel, The Girl Next Door, so I went over, met him, talked to him, and got his autograph and copy of his book, The Girl Next Door. And then I also went and saw Serena Vincent, Cabin Fever. She was actually the only person at the convention that I really wanted to get an autograph of. So I went over to her. She's absolutely fantastic. Very, very nice person. She had a number of items. I was able to get a photograph of her autographed as well as a picture of me and her together. You can see that on Facebook group Dark Discussions podcast. So that was my highlight of the convention. Now, the problem with only attending on Saturday is that it's tough to get interviews with a lot of folks. I would have loved to have got an interview with Serena Vincent, never mind Jack Ketchum and a number of other people. But what it is that Sundays is the day that the convention is usually the slowest. And as a result, a lot of the celebrities are able to do interviews much easier. And the thing is that first off, Rock and Shark wants media not to interview people on the convention floor. Because the thing is that all these people are there to see their celebrity favorites. And if media is always interviewing, it's going to be tough for these folks to get to meet the people they came to see. So it's very understandable that the best way to interview folks is when there's time free and not necessarily on the convention floor. So yeah, Saturday, very tough to get any interviews. So what I did instead was interview a few folks that I become personal friends with based off meeting them through the podcast and interviewing prior. So I put together a group of 4 or 5 interviews of these folks and their doings over the past year. Now, with that stated, anybody who has never been to Rock and Shark should most certainly attend. Or actually, if you're not in the greater New England area, there's plenty of conventions throughout the United States, at least in the United States. I'm sure in other countries as well. But here in the United States, they have dozens and dozens, almost monthly, throughout the country. And so there's always going to be a convention locally to you. And I highly recommend that you go. Now, you can get passes for the day. You can get passes for a weekend. But they're a fun time. They can get expensive depending on how many autographs you want or how many purchases you want to buy, because there's numerous vendors. And if you're a big fan of monster stuff, there's unbelievable amounts of monster stuff at these conventions. And so if if you have cash in your pocket, it can disappear pretty quick. Now, Rock and Shark, I highly recommend if you're in the New England area. Again, it's every October. You can find them on rockandshark.com. And actually, right now, their website is still there. It's there every day. So after listening to this episode, maybe just go check it out and see what they have to say. It's kind of interesting. There was one thing that was really cool, and that was that it was the world premiere of the Tony Todd film, The Army of the Damned. And that film actually goes wide in January. But they did the world premiere there. It's by Woodhaven Productions. And they, at Rock and Shark, were able to get them to do the premiere there. The film actually stars a number of folks. Tony Todd, Eric Roberts, Joey Fatone, Nick Principe, Jackie Moore, Jasmine St. Clair, Tom DiNucci, Tommy Dreamer. It has a large ensemble cast, a lot of names recognizable from wrestling, from horror films, from the music industry, and yet it is a great little film. At least I was told from those who had seen it. I unfortunately was unable to attend it due to the fact, again, that I couldn't stay the entire convention. So, Army of the Damned by Woodhaven Productions, starring Tony Todd, that will be released to the general public in January. Look for it. I heard it was a really good horror film. And Army of the Damned, you can gather, has something to do with maybe demons. So, anyway, just want to let that folks know about that. Now, let's get into the interviews. Let's just start them off. I'm going to just play them back to back to back to back to back, because I ask right off the bat everybody who they are, so I don't have to introduce them now. We can just let them introduce themselves. So let's get into those interviews, and hope you enjoyed this episode. And next week, you'll sit here regular episodes once again, but definitely listen to these interviews and hear about what's coming up from these folks, and actually probably check them out. I actually have the movies as well as the books from these folks. So, all right, here's the interviews.
All right, here at Rock and Sudden Shock once more, like we have been 2 years in a row. This is the third year. And with Joe Netter and Sarah French. And Joe, you're an author, and Sarah is an actress. And what happened was is that last year, I actually was able to read, well, it was actually, I bought it last year, but I read earlier this year, one of your books, Room. And I have to say, it was, and I said this offline to you earlier, that I read a lot of books this year, but out of all the books I read this year, and this is an honest fact, this was the book I had the most fun with.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And it's an anthology, or a collection, I should say.
Yeah.
And, well, Sarah's actually here now. So, Sarah, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
All right. And now, first off, Joe, Room, this came out last year, and it was the book you brought to Rock and Shock last year, right?
Yep. I believe I debuted it on this show last year.
Yeah, it was actually debuted. Now, this collection, I saw that it's on Amazon. Anybody can get it. So it's just called Room, R-O-O-M.
Yep, Room.
Now,
all my other books had a two-name title, so I wanted to do something with just one word.
Right. And so, really, was that the case?
Yeah, so I just picked Room.
That's awesome.
Because I wanted to get away from Zombie Bukkake, Vile Beauty. Although I went back with Crop Set. I went back to two words again.
Some of these stories, well, actually, every one of them is damn good, but you got everything here from zombies, you got vampires, you got lovers that want to kill who they want.
Yeah.
You even have a very literary story here.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk, first off, a couple of these stories first. Now, Parrish Woods, you just mentioned offline to me, was based off of woods that were near you, right?
Yeah, actually, where we live in Rochester, Minnesota, there's Quarry Hill Woods right by us. It actually was the woods right next to the Old State Mental Hospital. Mom worked at when I was a kid. Within the woods, there's the caves and all that. So when I wrote that, it's kind of based around there. And actually, where that actually came from completely was me and the family, Sarah, my kids, we have bonfires in the backyard. We live next to a cemetery, too. And we were telling scary stories. Then it came to be my turn to make something up. And what I made up was basically Parrish Woods. Most of what that story is what I just made up on the spot.
And that's interesting, too, because you're absolutely right. The story is the boyfriend telling the girlfriend a story, and then maybe it is true, or maybe there's a big twist.
Yep.
And it was a damn good story.
Well, thank you.
Lucky Night, this one has a really big twist. We shouldn't even talk about it, because people should just buy the book and read what happens. But it's basically some pervert that's falling, going out looking like at convenience stores, whatever, for someone to rape, I guess, right? And, well, something bad happens, but it's very unexpected what happens.
Well, in most of my stuff, I'm not a big guy on happy endings.
Right.
Although that one's that one's just, it's actually a screenplay I wrote called Lucky Night that I adapted to the short story. And it's fun. I mean, of all the stories in Room, that's probably the most kind of perverted and vulgar.
Right.
With this. Now, the title Room I basically came up with because I wanted a one-word title. And also, it's kind of a way, I kind of look at it as this is a different room in my mind for people to experience, because these stories are different than my other books. My other stuff's pretty vulgar. It's pretty fucked up.
Really? And yet you would never know based off of this book. Because this book, any of these stories you can find in a Stephen King anthology, for example. I mean, these are
thank
good.
Thank you. That's awesome.
I mean, Hell Hole is, and if I shouldn't say it, I can cut it out, but it's a bartender that actually may be in hell.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
And that was kind of a cool idea.
And that one is a lot of comedy.
A lot of
back and forth and weirdness.
Yeah, and then certain like people that used to be famous in their real life and then what they are now in hell, I guess. Yeah, yeah, it was kind of cool. Now, one of the stories that when I was reading this, the first two stories, Hell Hall and then Room 17, which is the lovers killing somebody.
Right? Yep.
And that was a kind of good story. But then Friend came about, and that was an interesting story because it was more literary than it was more like, I don't know if I would even call it true horror in a sense. It was more like a melodramatic, depressing story, which fits in a horror anthology anyway.
Sure.
But where did you get an idea for that? And I don't know if we should talk about that, the details, because again, people should read
it. Sure, don't want to give too much away. But like I said, that's the story that I get complimented on the most out of this book, where people bring up how much I've changed and grown over the years as a writer. Like I was telling you, that's actually a story I wrote almost 10 years ago, way back in the beginning, that I just never was comfortable kind of tweaking and putting out, that I finally did. Where it came from was, you know, there's times where I like to get high, and when I get stoned, you start thinking about things. And friends are a big thing. You know, you start thinking about the people you're friends with that you know, and you can't imagine your life without them, and how over the time it just drifts away. And that's kind of where that came from, was a depressing realization that the people that mean a lot to you over time tend to just kind of fade away.
Yeah, and the way you titled it was interesting, because it says friend is the name of the story, but you capitalize E-N-D as an end.
Yeah.
Now, before we get to the big one in the middle, the last two we haven't talked about was Redemption and Cemetery Roads. Why don't you talk about those two stories?
Yeah, Redemption was actually a zombie story I wrote for I believe it was an H.P., not H.P. Lovecraft. I don't even fucking remember. Somebody put out an anthology on zombies, and that was a story I wrote for it. That then reverted back to me, so I made some changes and put it in here. I wouldn't say it's a classic zombie story, because there are some twists and turns in it. But basically, that's what that is. That's a zombie. A little girl's killed. People go to the cemetery, and kind of all hell breaks loose from there. It gives you a different look, at least for me, on what zombies are and what possibly they could be feeling and seeing. And then Cemetery Roads was completely done simply because of the title. I thought that would be a cool name for a woman. Would be, if your last name was Rhodes, to have first name Cemetery. So I simply went in to write, all right, I want to have a story about a girl named Cemetery Rhodes. What can I do with her? And it just kind of flowed out as is. And that was a last-minute add-on. Literally like a day before I sent it off, I thought, well, I'll write that one out too, just to have one extra thing.
And that's basically the Buried in a Box.
Buried in a Box. I'd never done a story of you know, premature burial type stuff. So that is what my attempt is. And she's actually, that character is popping up in a novel I'm writing right now too, on demons. So I am bringing her back for that. So that was also kind of an introduction to her, what she goes through in it, and then where she goes from there.
Nice. Now, Stiff. This is an interesting tale, because I did mention to you offline that one of the themes is in Dreamcatcher by Stephen King. But the thing that really sticks out, even though that's what people are probably going to remember the most, is that it's really Lovecraftian.
Sure.
It really, really is. I mean, Lovecraftian stuff is out there. Everybody does it. But you did it. I thought you did it. You were one of the more effective ones I've read.
Well, cool. I appreciate that. It was, again, sitting around that fire with my family, and my actually 10-year-old daughter at the time made up a story. Her story had to do with an octopus. So I took the tentacles and kind of ran with it. Also, I had my spinal surgery before that, and spent some time in the hospital. I hate hospitals. I mean, they creep me the fuck out. So I kind of wrapped that around it, too. Plus, the title's Stiff, because the guy has a fear of getting erections in public places. I suffer from that. If I'm sleeping anywhere in public, I have to have something over my lap, because I'm very fearful about getting a boner. And having everybody come by and marvel at it.
I mean, that's legitimate. I mean, you always hear the nuns that would beat the kids because of things, stupid thing. You know, and it just happens. You know, what are you going to do, you know?
Yep. If I'm on a plane and I'm going to try to sleep, the tray table has to come down. I won't without it.
Hey, everybody has OCD, so that may be yours.
I have a touch of it.
Before we get into some of the other stuff, let's bring Sarah in, because Sarah's here. How are you doing, Sarah, again?
I'm still here, and I'm still doing good.
Now, what are you known for? Obviously, the people who listen to this podcast already know you from our playing at the Vision before, but you've done a lot of movies. You've been a supporting actress, you've been a leading actress, you've been, some people would even call you dream queen, but you've done more than that. Why don't you let folks know what, you know, your movies, some of the things that you've done?
Yeah, I mean, I've really done a little bit of everything. I've done, you know, feature movies, short films, music videos, commercials. So I do a little bit of everything, but what a lot of people know me from is Shriek of the Sasquatch, Strip Club Slasher, Potpourri, In Harm's Way, a lot of the independent or budget movies. But
Ghostbusters 911.
Ghostbusters 911, which is a web series, and also martial art movies, Opposite Blood. So that one should be coming out at some point, I think. But, yeah, and I just did a bunch of new ones this year. I did three zombie movies this year, which is pretty rare. I don't usually do a lot of zombie movies, but one's called Lazarus. That one, it takes place in the 50s.
It's black and white.
Yeah, that one's black and white. So that it looked pretty cool from what I've seen so far. Also, Zombie Pirates. Basically just what the title says. And then a recent one I did is called Zombie Dolls. So I just filmed that a few weeks ago in Minnesota. So I've been keeping busy, that's for sure.
Now, what about the, we talked offline a little bit, the insect movie, the giant insect movie. What, talk about that one.
Yeah, Insectula. It's basically just a big bug movie. It's
good to see you, yeah.
It's styled kind of after the Roger Corman 50s big bug movies. With that one, it's currently in post-production, and it's slated to come out sometime in February, March of next spring, 2014. So really looking forward to that one.
Right. Now, Joe, you wrote some of the screenplays in the past. I think that's how you guys met originally, right?
I did. Yep. I did. You know, actually, I haven't wrote anything we've worked on together since we've been together. I did.
Which is weird. There's a lot of scripts options, but.
Sure. I did a screenplay. I did a rewrite on Pajama Party Massacre, which was her first film that I killed her in.
That's how we met.
Three of the stories in Terror Overload, and then Strip Club Slasher. All very no budget.
No budget, yeah,
you know,
very.
C-grade movies, but fun, and we got to meet and became friends, and have had fun. And since then, we haven't really worked together.
Yeah.
I mean, we have our separate stuff we go. She's attached to a few projects I've written that are waiting to go forward.
Yeah, for the money.
Yeah. So she's not just using me for my writing ability.
Right.
It's also because of my lovemaking.
There you go. Now, those films that all those films are on Amazon, right? I mean, you can.
Yeah,
most of them. Yeah.
They're available online if you search. All of them were done by NFTS Productions. So if you go to NFTS Productions, not through Squeamish Productions, they'll have all of them on there. And like Terror Overload, usually it's on Amazon. It was on pay-per-view and stuff, so usually that's floating around. Potpourri, she did last year. That's kind of a zombie. Hey, that was a zombie thing too. Now that I
that was like 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
It's been a while since I've done a zombie film. Since now I've done three this year.
Potpourri's on Netflix. That's a zombie comedy musical. A little bit of everything.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And then Problem Solved the Republic.
Oh, that's right.
That's a musical superhero.
That's by the
political
same guys.
Satire movie. It's really good.
Yeah.
I get naked in that one.
So is that on downstream or Netflix?
That
right
one's not yet. That
not
one's
yet,
on,
but they're getting,
it's in video stores and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's their next step, I believe, is Netflix.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Very good. Now, we were talking in room that the zombie story, but you started way back, right? And there's a book called, what is it called?
Zombie Bukkake.
And you were just talking offline to a couple of folks here about how you were on the history channel. Why don't you explain that?
Yeah, it was, the thing is, I got contacted by some guys doing a documentary for the History Channel called Fear File Zombies. It was going to be the first part of a three-part series. It was supposed to be Fear File Zombies, then Werewolves, then Vampires. And they wanted to fly me to L.A. to be interviewed. First thing I thought was, yeah, fuck you. It's got to be somebody I know just fucking with me. There's no way the History Channel's going to. There's no way. Zombie Bukkake, no way. Turns out, it was serious. They flew me to L.A. We did a two-hour interview in a cemetery. I was there that day with Sid Haig and Kai Rushan. Very cool. Way to excited for it to air. My wife at the time was there, a couple friends of mine, and aired on History Channel, and of course right in the beginning it pops up with my one comment I made about Jesus being a zombie. The 2-hour interview about zombie movies, one throwaway little section about Jesus being a zombie, and that's actually all they used for me. And credited me on screen as author Zombie Bukkake. It aired once, and I guess they got a lot of complaints and pissed off people. Because I was actually a counterpoint to some college professor arguing about Jesus not being a zombie. So it made it seem like I was kind of, you know, telling him, no, Jesus was definitely a zombie, blah, 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 blah. Actually, at that point, I hadn't even wrote the book. It was a fake title. I just joked about during readings and performances and stuff. So once it got on the History Channel, I thought, you know, I should probably write it now. Give it a shot.
And it's a fairly long book.
Yeah, it's a novel. It's 200 pages.
Yeah.
I think it's 70,000 words, so it's not a long novel, but... you know, and it has a lot of stuff. I mean, it's fucked up. If you know what Bukkake means, it's fucked up. But it's also really about family and loving your family and taking care of them. When I started writing it, I went in thinking, all right, I'll just make it as vulgar as possible. And quickly I decided, well, I still want you to care about the people. So I started changing it up and made the characters a little more, gave them a little more depth. Most people don't realize that when they go into it, that it is. There is this legitimate story. It's not just zombies coming on each other. But there is that, too. But I'm very happy with that one, though. People seem to like it. I get a lot of laughs. Almost everybody that comes over and looks at it just kind of laughs and shakes their head.
Yeah, the title alone, you would think, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But that's the thing, is that they should read the book, right? And then they know what it is.
Most people that buy it never buy it for themselves. It's always for a quote-unquote friend.
Right.
That's it for me.
Right. And it is on Amazon. I saw it there around
Amazon,
a couple days ago.
Barnes and Noble. It's all over everywhere.
Let's talk about these other two short story collections you had here. Your first one was Twisted Loneliness. You said that was the very first book you ever put out.
Yep, that has an introduction by Sid Haig.
Nice.
I actually had a few books before that one through a small press that I don't like to talk about.
Sure.
So most of the stories that came out through them I compiled for this one when I went with that. Intro by Sid Haig, which was very cool. You know, he was is a friend of mine. So, and that one still to this day is the number one selling book I have.
And when you say number one selling, you mean obviously it's sold more just for the fact that it's older.
Yeah.
But you're still saying even right now, when people buy your books, they go
to number one.
Nice.
I think basically because when they ask me, well, you know, which one should I get? I always tell them, well, we start at the beginning, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
I push Room a lot because I'm very proud of that. But Twisted Loneliness is the one that just keeps selling. It's got a cool cover.
Yeah.
Jamie Cross, who did the cover art, is the guy who did my ass tattoo. So, I mean, it's cool. I like that book. It's it hit home. So there are moments that made Sarah cry when she first read it.
Really?
She could tell where some of the stuff in there, where I was coming from.
Right.
Because most all this, she's quickly learning. There's nods all the time to things we've done or experienced. And she'll be able to read a story and say, wait a minute, I know where you got that.
Yeah. Parrish Woods.
Yep.
Yeah, like little sayings, like we have, we know the meaning.
Yeah.
And it's like an inside thing.
I'll slip little lines in that I know she'll be the only one that gets, you know, really gets what the purpose was. It's fun.
Now, File Beauty is your other collection. What was that one about?
That was initially titled Sucked Up Fit. I thought, well, to get it in bookstores, I can't have it be called Fucked Up Shit, so I call it Sucked Up Fit. And in the back cover, I think I had the word cunt, and I wasn't thinking properly, but it never sold under that title. Nobody would buy it. I don't know why. Everybody would bypass it. They'd still buy that one. Or I have a couple other ones, too, I don't even have out here. But so I gave it a new title, a new artwork. Still hasn't sold the best. Still the least selling. But it's all short stories. Very, very vulgar ones, though. Of the collections, that's probably the most vulgar one, where everything's pervy, it's fucked up. I didn't necessarily try to do that. They just came out really that way. It's got the most screwed up thing I've ever written, called For the Love of Orson Welles, Fat Black Ejaculate. That one's pure filth. I wrote that simply to be gross. actually wrote it for a Girl Scout contest, that after it was submitted, they changed all the rules so that it would be disqualified from it. And the one that ended up winning paled in comparison when it comes to Girl Scout stuff. So. But I was able to use it here, and it's cool.
Yeah, and I got to say, the cover art and the title is a catchy title, actually, to be honest. That's cool. Now, you have something else here. You said that is only, it's signed and numbered, and it's, but you only can get it here. So the folks that listen to this, unfortunately, are screwed, right?
Yeah. Well, it's
unless they contact you maybe on Facebook or something, right?
If they contact me through my website or in November, I'm going to be in Chicago at Days of the Dead. There's 500 copies, each individually numbered and signed. Limited edition chapbook. It's a 15,000 word story. It's tough though, because I can't really describe too much of it or it gives everything away. Just know that it has to do with scarecrows and people disappearing.
I got to say that the cover on it, even though it's not as the person you don't know like you did for the other, it's still a damn good cover. It really is.
Well, when I was looking for art for it, because I did it so last minute, I just went to a place that had stock photos you could buy, and that one popped up, and I thought, oh, that's perfect.
It's really
kind of cartoony, which my worry always is that kids may think it's okay, and I don't want to have that happen.
Sure.
But it's an interesting story. I'm very curious to see how it goes over.
Now, let me ask you, like for example, Crop's Edge, the new one, and Room for sure. I know for sure Room. But would you say Twisted Loneliness and Crop's Edge, anybody who reads Stephen King, so even like a 13-year-old who read Stephen King, would they be able to read those?
Oh, sure.
They would.
Yeah, I mean, there's graphic sex and stuff in there. But
Stephen King does it too.
Sure. Yeah. And at 13, they're probably capable of that. I do have a novella that I wrote actually, with my oldest daughter when she was 11, we wrote a book together that's very PG. It's more of a Goosebumps type stuff. I used to bring that to shows, and people got it for their kids, and they come back for the next one. And I started thinking, well, I maybe shouldn't do that, because some parents don't know what bukkake means, and they don't need to be giving that to a 10-year-old. But, you know, most everybody can probably handle it. I mean, it's vulgar and fucked up, but there's a lot of comedy with it. You know, so it's not vulgar and pervy simply to be vulgar and pervy. There's a little comedy underneath it.
Now, you said a little bit earlier in this interview, but you told me offline too, you're writing two novels now that you're trying to go at. Well, do you want to discuss any of those and let folks know about those?
Sure. I've got one based on demons. That one I'm really taking my time with.
Cemetery Rhodes is going to be in.
Yep, she's going to be in that one. I'm planning on trying the more traditional that way. I'm going to submit it to some presses and stuff like that and hope for the best. The other one I'll probably put on my own. That's set in the future, dealing with suicide. It's a slasher thing.
Is it like a cyberpunk type of future? Or
not really. It's basically in the future. Everything's kind of standardized.
Okay.
And there's a lot that's legal, including suicide. Now, people can't kill themselves because they go to hell. But it's completely okay to pay a company to kill you. So there's a company you can go to that will kill you in whatever way you want. One of the themes they can go with is movie theme. You can pick to die like anything, any kind of movie you want. The guy goes in and picks slasher. Leaves. He's a drunken mess. He leaves. And when he gets home, he wakes up and thinks, well, that was stupid. That's not real. I don't remember that. Meets a girl, gets a girlfriend, and is very happy in life. Only to then one day wake up with the girlfriend in the cabin in the woods, knowing, oh, shit, this really is kind of happening. And then him fighting to want to survive now, because now he wants to live. You know, his life got better. That one's fun, because I love slasher. I love slasher films. But I wanted to go kind of in the future. There's a lot of twists and turns to it. I thought that'd be a cool concept, you know, just government-assisted suicide. Companies making money on it. Because people, you know, if you do believe in a God, killing yourself would send you to hell. If somebody kills you, that could be different. So that one I'll do on my own. I don't think that has much mainstream potential, but we'll see.
Now, whether you do on your own or a third party or second party publishes it, either of those books. Would they be available, you think, next year, or is that your hope, I should say? Because you never know. You never know.
I would hope both next year both of them are available. I hope so. With the Demon one, sending it to a traditional publisher, that can take quite some time to hear back. So, which is why I'm doing two, because that's the backup. Is next year I'd have the other one no matter what. So.
Right.
But I hope. The hope is to have both of them out. And the hope is to finally have a couple of the screenplays I've optioned get actually made, too.
Right.
Because I've optioned a handful of screenplays that just seem to not ever get made. And I'd like to see that happen, too.
Right.
I mean, that's writing screenplays is way different than the fiction. But it's fun, and it's nice to see people bring it to life.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like you said, development hell, or it gets passed around, and you just have to wait.
You get the option, you get a little bit of money up front, and then you just wait.
Wait.
Right. Yeah, it's Hollow Point. It's been almost 5 years of waiting.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm finally hearing it's moving forward, but I think I heard that last year, too, so I hope. And that was featured on Sci-Fi Channel's Monster Man TV show. They did an episode about
Yeah, I remember that. Reading that on your Facebook page. Yeah.
Making it seem like they were actually filming it, which they weren't. They were just shooting a demo trailer.
Right.
I have high hopes for that. Sarah's one of the stars in that. She was actually cast in that before we were together. Without me even knowing, I mean, they casted her, and then I said, oh, you casted Sarah. I worked there. So again, for those that are out there thinking she's getting stuff because of me, she's not. She usually loses stuff because of me.
That's not true.
Now, Sarah, we discussed three zombie films that should be coming out probably next year, maybe.
Yes.
Now, what else? And obviously, it's the giant insect film. But any other films that you are scheduled to do or are coming out, or any that you have done already that people can buy that you're really proud of that you recommend?
Well, yeah, the Insectula, that one, like I was saying, should be coming out February, March. That's probably going to be the soonest, or the one movie that'll be coming out before the rest of them. Because it takes a while in the independent, low-budget field. You know, no one has money for anything, so you have to wait. But, yeah, so next year at some point, there will be a good amount coming out. Currently, you know, again, Hollow Point, working on that still. And there's a bunch of other ones in the works that I really can't talk about, but they're definitely waiting to get, you know, the money and things like that for us, so...
And it's the finishing funds, because we both have films we worked on 4 years ago that are shot and it just never came out.
And they're just shelved right now.
Yeah, they're just sitting there. I mean, I did a film with Kane Hodder and Caroline Williams, Eileen D. It's a bunch of horror people that's just been sitting there for 5 years.
And that's what happens. I mean, Wishmaster took how many years to make that?
Yeah, I think six, seven years to get that out.
People don't realize the process. It's not an easy process. It's very expensive, time-consuming. You know, a lot of movies don't come out for years, even big budget movies. That's just the way it is, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is. Now, out of the movies that people can find now, and I know you used to have a stage name too, so folks may have to find it under those instead. But if they do go to Sarah French on IMDb, they're going to find everything, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So
and they can even Google, you know, Scarlett Salem, and that was my stage name a few years ago. I did a lot of movies under that name. They should be able to find stuff under that name too. But Sarah French on IMDb, all of them are on there.
Which ones would you recommend folks to purchase? Because I remember last year you had a bunch of films out, and I bought a handful of them. And I know you have others, but what ones would they be able to find on Amazon that you would recommend?
I would recommend Shriek of the Sasquatch. Yep. For those who love the 70s grindhouse, you know, drive-in movie style. Also, Potpourri, the zombie movie we were talking about, because it's shot very well, and there's a lot of different elements to it. And In Harm's Way, that one's more of a crime drama. I have a nice little scene in that. So I'd say those are the three main ones for now.
Yeah.
And then Insectula, when that comes out, Lazarus, and Zombie Pirates.
Killer Biker Chicks has been re-released again.
The Bitch That Cried Wolf, I didn't mention that. It's a werewolf movie I did about 4 months ago. The director that filmed that, Creep Creeperson, also I did the Zombie Dolls with a couple weeks ago. So, again, those all should be out by next year.
Nice. And Joe, you just mentioned there was the Biker Chick one that was just re-released?
Oh. Yeah, she did. One of her first films she did was out in Vegas. It was Killer Biker Chicks. And it just popped up again on pay-per-view on demand. Those kind of places. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
And so, is that something like Faster Pussy Death Kill Bill or something like or Switchblade Sisters?
I think that's what it was meant to be.
Okay.
But it kind of drifted. I mean, they're a bunch of killer biker chicks.
And the story is, it's like there's two police officers in it, and they're kind of like I don't know, what would the word be? They're kind of doofy,
comic relief.
Yeah. And the story is really on them, and with the killer biker chicks in there, and they're trying to, you know, bust them and all this stuff. It's definitely a unique...
It's the best
I can say.
There's boobs in it.
That's
not hers. Yeah. Not hers.
I think I was the only one that did it, but I probably should denounce that. But it's still really good.
People like boobs.
Oh, I know. I'm sure they'd want to see mine on there.
That's what I think she meant.
Yeah.
Terror overload, you can see.
There you go. That's the one with the truck on that.
Yeah.
That's how my parents actually first saw her. It was on pay-per-view, her topless and Terror Overload.
I also have a topless scene in the new Zombie Pirates.
And that was Fred Olin Ray, who did, I believe, Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers.
Oh, yeah.
Is putting that one out. So.
Nice. And again, that should be out next year.
Best case scenario.
Right. Now is it going to take place in the modern era, or where, you know, the pirates, ghost zombie pirates come up from the...
Well, it's actually the director's a huge fan of the fog, John Carpenter's fog,
yeah.
And a lot of it... It's an inspiration, like the movie. What, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. It's a lot like that. I mean, basically, there's a curse, and her character can bring up these zombie pirates, and she has to do a certain something for them, and in order to get gold, and it kind of goes down that. So that's the basic premise.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And it's cool. You shot that in Mississippi, right?
Yep, we shot that in Mississippi, and that's actually from the same director I did Shriek the Sasquatch with.
Oh, good.
He filmed that one, and Fred Olin Ray is putting it out. So, that's pretty cool. It was great working with Steve Sessions, who did Shriek. It's great working with him again, because we're like best friends. So much fun to work with. You know, he contacted me to do this movie. I was like, I'm down. I love the script. It was a lot of fun. And who doesn't love zombie pirates?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yep, and boobs. And your boobs are in that one.
Yes.
There you go. It's something that you get to see every night, Joe.
Yeah.
And every morning.
Every morning. So here's the thing, though, is she puts her makeup on naked.
Oh, that's cool.
It's like a 45-minute process. And it was very cool, but after 4 years, not that I'm over it, but...
It's second nature now.
It's like, you know, trying to watch South Park.
I'm just walking around.
Yeah, strutting around naked.
Your short story, Canopic Jaws, it's coming in at, right?
Yep. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, I'm glad.
It's going to be a very good anthology.
Yeah, the authors are wide range, and the stories aren't just mummies and museums. It's all sorts of things that are somewhat related, but not necessarily 100%.
Sure.
And your story is called Crack in the Sarcophagus.
Yep.
And it's... For some reason, it just felt to me that it was in Chicago. But where is it supposed to be taken?
You know, I left it kind of vague. It's a big city.
Yeah, exactly.
Chicago works, though, because I've been there. I think we've been there 4 times last year.
And you're going to be there. That's the next convention you go to.
So I'm excited about that. I think you guys put together a good group of people. So.
Yeah.
As a fan, I'm looking forward to reading all the stories, because you're right.
Me too.
People think mummies, it's automatically Egypt, pyramids, or museum.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm sure you got a bunch of those.
Sure.
But, I'm curious to see where everybody takes it. Yeah. I mean, reading some of the titles I've seen online of the stories makes me think there's going to be a lot of really out there cool stuff.
So. It'll be a nice twist.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Yeah, so that is good. November 8th, that comes out, so it's, I'm glad that you were able to get us a story, yeah. And it was a damn good story.
Absolutely. Well, yep. Thank you.
Yeah, so November 8th. Now, anything further you guys want to let folks know about, like websites, where they can reach you? Sarah, you saw a lot of modeling stuff as well as movie posters, yep. And whatever. Maybe where people could possibly get your photographs. Obviously, they can buy your books right on Amazon, but for either of you, how would people get to contact you and maybe get those items?
They can visit my website at www.sarahfrenchonline.com, and you can check out all my movies and 8x10s and all that good stuff.
Now, Sarah is S-A-R-A-H or S-A-R-A?
S-A-R-A-H.
Okay, very good. And what about you, Joe?
I can be found at www.joenetter.com. You can also add me on Facebook, Joe Netter, Twitter, Joe Netter. Quite often I post any random shit that pops in my head, so it's always interesting to see what I throw up there.
Very good. Absolutely. So, fantastic. I hope the rest of the convention goes well for you folks.
And, absolutely.
Always.
Definitely looking forward to seeing you guys next year. Hopefully, too, right?
Yeah, as long as I'm allowed back, which is usually a 50-50 shot.
Whatever, they love you.
Yeah, here I can get away with quite a bit here, so we'll definitely be back.
Excellent, very good. All right, sounds good. And if anything comes out that you guys want folks to know, just let me know, and I'll get it back on the podcast. And I also can do Skype you guys in anytime if you guys want to promote something.
So okay, cool.
Just let us know.
Very
absolutely.
Cool.
All right, excellent. Thanks
right,
a lot.
Thank you.
Appreciate
it's a pleasure.
Here at Rock and Shock with, well, Mike Neal. Why don't you let everybody know who you are and what you did, because we've talked to you a few times. My co-host Mike has talked to some of your colleagues on the movie that you did, the prior movie, but there's a big announcement that's coming up, so why don't you let everybody know who you are?
Sure, my name is Michael Neal. I directed a horror film called Drive-In Horror Show, which Phil has talked about and interviewed me for. It's like Creepshow at a drive-in anthology style film. It's been out on DVD, PlayStation Network, VOD for a couple years. And then the recent project I did with my Drive-In Horror Show collaborator, Greg Anson, is called Infinite Santa 8000. It's based on a web series about Santa Claus fighting mutants in the year 8000. He fights robots, too, with a heavy metal soundtrack in the post-apocalypse. And so we did a web series for it that people seemed to dig, so we made a movie out of it, a feature film, which is much more epic, bigger in scope, bigger in everything. And it's coming out on VOD on December 1st, and various download outlets. Nothing in stone yet, but look for it on places like iTunes, Amazon, Amazon Prime, stuff like that.
Now, before we get into the Santa, let's talk about the drive-in film first, because a lot of folks, especially now, anthologies are a huge event. I mean, you got the ABCs, the Death, you got the VHS films,
yep.
There was the English film from England called Little Deaths. That was like a year and a half ago. Simon
yep.
Rumley was in that one.
Yep.
Now, yours came out about 2 or 3 years ago,
yeah,
right?
2011.
Yeah, and it's done pretty well, and it's now, like you said, picked up everywhere. I mean, we see it at conventions a lot. Obviously, this year it hasn't been as much because you got this new project coming out, and you're going to be throwing it that big.
Yeah.
But what do the folks know what the anthology is about? I mean, I know we've discussed it before, but every since the last time we talked, like the Facebook group's grown over 100 people.
Yeah.
New people, I know that listen to the podcast may have gotten back to the older episodes yet.
Yeah.
Why don't you explain the stories in them and the subgenres that they're about?
Sure. So our overall idea was to make an anthology film where every story was different. You know, for example, I mean, Creepshow, the stories are wonderful, but they're all pretty similar. So we thought, well, if we're going to do this, let's make a big variety. So the first one we did is called Pig. It's a rape revenge story, like those kind of brutal, you know, I Spit on Your Grave films from the 70s. And it's a very serious, dark, kind of disturbing, torturous kind of tone. We follow that up with a really silly fairy tale kind of film, almost like The Twilight Zone, about a child who has this horrible family, and he finds a monster in his closet that kind of promises to help him out and kind of get rid of his family, basically. It's much more lighter in tone. It stars kids and all that. And then we went to one called Fall Apart, which is like a body horror film. It's almost like The Fly. It's a doctor who's one of these angel kind of doctors, maybe not a literal angel, but, you know, he goes, still does house calls, it really cares about people, isn't in it for the money, is in it to help people, and he contracts this horrible, horrible disease. This is one that's very tragic, like the Cronenberg films, and very gory. We wanted a gross out, and this was the one where we spent a lot of money on the effects to just go over the top. Followed that by The Meat Man, which is an urban legend style film, also starring kids, and a little lighter too. It has some gore in it, but it's mostly about an urban legend about a serial killer in suburbia that takes pieces of meat from his victims, and the kids come to some possible, I don't want to really spoil anything, but they have some realizations about who the killer might be that are kind of surprising. And then we follow that up by The Watcher, which is a pretty much, it's like every 80s style slasher film kind of rolled into one. You know, a bunch of idiot not really teenagers, but kind of early 20-somethings go off in the woods to have sex and smoke and drink, and then get stalked by a murderous maniac, basically. Wanted to keep it really simple, really scary, and also very, very gory. That's our other one that special effects spent a lot of work on. And then there's the overall theme of the post-apocalyptic drive-in, which is much lighter in tone. It's more like a Tales from the Crypt style. So that's the overall thing, and we've been very fortunate. We've found a lot of fans for it, and we're very grateful for the exposure we've had, and it keeps growing, so we're really happy with it.
Yeah, people can find the movie right on Amazon, right? And you also have your own website. Do you guys sell it besides at conventions? Do you sell it where they can contact you directly, maybe get autographs from the writers, producers, directors, which is basically part of you? Is that possible, or their only option at this time is really Amazon and things like that?
Well, you can buy it just kind of straight up from our website. You can buy it through our label or from Amazon or a bunch of other stuff. You can always reach out to us if you want. I mean, you know, I'd be more than happy to autograph something for you, and from our website, through Amazon, through our label, through a bunch of different stuff. It's all there. You got a lot of choices. And you can also contact us. We'd be happy to autograph stuff for you and send it over. We have a comic book too, which tells a totally different story. It's also available. So we like to interact with anybody, all of our fans. We've made a lot of friends through Facebook, some that have become personal friends of ours. And anybody that wants to reach out to us, just let us know.
People can find you on Facebook too, right?
Absolutely. You can find us on Facebook. Just go to our driveinhorrorshow.com website. You'll have the links to Facebook, IMDb, Twitter, all that stuff.
Nice. Now, the VHS crew, they made part two. Would you guys ever consider doing that? Because with anthologies, like I said, now more popular than ever, probably, it may be a perfect time to do it. Because, for example, when yours came out in 2011, it's slowly grown in popularity now. But now, where people are into anthologies, maybe it would work.
Like a Drive-In Horror Show part two?
Yeah.
Sure. Well, we would love to. We wrote, after the film was finished, we wrote another 11 or so stories that are in the same style of Drive-In Horror Show. You know, all sorts of genres again. And which we always thought we could mix into either two sequels, two and three, or possibly a television show, because this, I think, would also fit with the style of the old Tales from the Crypt show from the 80s and 90s. And we would love to do it. It really just depends on the market. If there's a demand for it, and yeah, basically, if there's a demand for it and interest, we'd love to do it. It's just sitting there waiting to be done. So at the moment, that kind of remains to be seen. But the film's still growing. So like you said, anthologies are growing. We're open to do it, no question. We'd love to do another one.
Now, would you guys consider doing an ABC of Death part two? They're doing the little shorts. I know I see someone here doing a Kickstarter for Letter M. Would you?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you guys did a great film. There's maybe producers that listen to this podcast. I don't know, even though we have, like, who knows how many people. What would you say to them?
Well, it's funny. That's something that would have fit perfectly for us. We've been focusing all of our efforts on getting our current project out at the moment, so it's been a little tough to get it together, but that would be something perfect for us. And I think for all these other filmmakers that are submitting, and the basic idea is that, you know, you submit a short film for the letter M for ABCs of Death 2, and then that filmmaker gets in the film, the one that wins gets in the film with all the other films and gets their name up there. And so that would be wonderful. You know, like I said, for us, the timing didn't really work out. But in terms of the spirit of collaboration and exposing the public to filmmakers they might not see otherwise, I think that's what they're doing is wonderful. And if the timing were different, I think we definitely would have done something.
Now, since you said that, you know, the timing obviously didn't work because of this big project. And before we talk about it, back in the 70s, there was the movie Heavy Metal.
Yep.
And the graphic novel book still comes out every month or every 2 months, I think it is. And then we have a lot of Japanese anime.
Yep.
And when I'm bringing these up, they're all cartoons, animation, but they're more adult. And when I say adult, I'm not talking, you know, pornography, whatever. I'm talking R-rated, you know, stuff.
Yeah.
Because they're violence and profanity, whatever. And now you guys here have a new short. Well, actually, you did shorts, and now it's a feature-length film that's coming out on December 1st. And why don't you let folks know about it? Because fans of heavy metal and anime, they may be interested in something like this.
Well, sure. When Drive-In Horror Show was finished and we were looking to get it out, Greg Anson and I, who created Drive-In Horror Show together, we wanted to do another project, so we knew a few artists who did effects from Drive-In Horror Show who are also tattoo artists, and we thought we could do something animated in these little animated shorts for a web series, and we somehow came up with Infinite Santa 8000, which is Santa Claus fighting mutants in the year 8000 for a heavy metal soundtrack and post-apocalypse and everything. So it just kind of happened, and we made this web series that lasted for 13 episodes, about 3 minutes apiece. And when we were done, we had a pretty big following. It's definitely an adult-style web series in the vein of what you were talking about before, heavy metal and all that stuff. And we had fans that were asking us for more content and had a very positive reception, which we were very honored by. So when we were looking for our next project after Drive-In Horror Show was done and out there and everything, we thought, well, let's see if we can kind of take it to the next level and make a film out of it. So we decided to make a film version of the... Well, it's actually not a film version of the web series. It's a totally separate story that takes place 100 years after the web series. And we thought, let's take these characters and expand them, expand the world, and expand, you know, we have huge battle scenes in this. We have a chase with Santa's sleigh and a scooter. We have all this stuff that we didn't really have time to do in the web series. You know, and but the thing is, if you're going to make it into a film, you should make it bigger and you should expand the scope, you know, and the world. You shouldn't just take this little thing and try to take the same structure of small little pieces from a web series and stick them together. You should make a bigger story. So that was the idea. And it's coming out on VOD on December 1st. And like I said, the iTunes and all that sort of stuff. And we're really excited about it. So it was a lot of work, about 2 years to do. But it was really worth it. It was a lot of fun.
Now, where would folks be able to get the VOD? Or is that not going to be announced until maybe the next time we talk?
Sure. Well, the details are still being worked out, but everything you need to know will be at infinitesanta.com. So that's the place where you can go and find out all the different places will be available. That's the easiest way to do it. Plus, you can watch trailers for the film. You can watch the original web series. So the website's really the best place to go to find out all that stuff.
Now, the thing that was interesting is that me, you, and a few other folks were just talking film and such offline a little while ago, and you mentioned that the original short series for Infinite Santa, not only, and because of the digital age we live in today, where you put it up on YouTube and whatnot, you're telling me that you have fans, lots of fans from Asia and Eastern Europe that have watched the movie, right?
Yeah, they've watched the web series. It's funny because one of the great things YouTube does is it shows you where your fans are from. And it really, it kind of speaks to the universality of the, I don't know, that's not a very good word, I guess, but just that fans of horror and action and kind of, you know, offbeat kind of genres really come from everywhere. So it's interesting to see, and we have a huge following in the Philippines of all places. So one of the reasons we're excited for the VOD release for this is to reach a larger number of people across the world.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because as you probably know, and I know you know, because you write an article sometimes for the Boston Phoenix, and you discuss foreign horror films a lot. And right now, they're everywhere, and it's offbeat, like you said, and the fans are not only from the United States, but they're from Mexico, they're from Norway, never mind filmmakers as well. And so it's kind of cool how you're able to get this out there. And
it's got Siri.
It being animated, do you think that makes it maybe a little more easier for people to get into it, maybe? I don't know. I mean, it's just interesting.
It's a good question. I think it does make it unique for sure. And it makes the violence more accessible somehow. Like, if we were to film this in real life, it would be, like, unbelievably gory. But there's something about seeing it animated that isn't quite as bad. And I think that, I don't know, there is something appealing about animation for people that does tend to cross genres. Santa Claus as a character also is universally accepted. It's not really seen as much as a religious icon with Christmas. It's more of like a Hallmark icon. And that's something we've always felt strongly about for the film and the web series, is this isn't a religious Christmas film necessarily. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but we were aiming more just for the kind of fun, you know, Hallmark Coca-Cola kind of Santa world. You know, ours is much more twisted, but, you know, Santa himself is still Santa. He's still sweet and good and doesn't want to hurt anybody and wants to give presents to kids. He's just forced to fight and kick ass, so if he has to, he does.
But you know what? A lot of people, like in A Christmas Story, there are these other movies where they show Santa as, even though he's supposed to be nice, it's just some, you know, person playing him, and he's scary to little kids sometimes. And so I think almost like how people get scared of clowns, I mean, that could be part of it. I don't know. I mean, it's possible. And it was kind of cool that, or interesting that you would choose that. Would you ever consider going on to maybe another Hallmark thing, like the Easter Bunny or something?
Oh, sure. Well, it's funny you mentioned that. We have an Easter Bunny in the film, a gigantic Easter Bunny that Santa fights. So that, again, comes from that Hallmark tradition, I think, that totally fits. But to answer your question about the Santa blend with horror, it's definitely there. It's a long tradition. And I think it's part of what makes Christmas and horror fit so well together. There is something kind of inherently creepy about Santa Claus. You know, he knows where you're, you know, when you're sleeping, and kind of spies on you a little bit. And, you know, there is this whole Christmas horror subgenre, which is very, you know, I think the two genres just fit well together. And I think for us, we wanted to start off doing something with Christmas and horror anyway from the beginning, and it kind of morphed into this. But there's a reason that we chose that, because it's a nice subculture for Christmas horror, and there are a lot of entertaining films that mix the two together, and we thought that would be something we'd want to do.
Well, you know what, and you know, me and you are probably a pretty close in age. When we were kids, you were probably a big horror fan like I was.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Kid. One of the greatest things I look forward to every Christmas, besides obviously Christmas Day, was The Grinch Who Stole Christmas.
Yeah, of course.
And you know, Boris Karloff, you know, my mother told me, that's Frankenstein, you know, that's doing the voice for The Grinch. And I'm like, yeah, narrating the whole thing. I'm like, no way, you know. And so from that, all the way to when we got older and teenage and whatever, and Silent Night, Deadly Night, and all this,
yep,
it really, really does. And I mean, would you say stuff like that was part of the reason why you chose Santa Claus and all that as to do a whole movie? Because obviously you said it was a 2-year process, never mind the 3-minute shorts prior to that.
Right.
It's a lot of work, so something in you must have said, this is what we got to do, this is a great idea. What was that?
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, when we first started, we thought that there were a bunch of reasons we wanted to do Christmas. And, you know, one of which is that from a marketing standpoint, it's relevant every year, so it helps the film grow. But you're right. I mean, we love films like Christmas Evil, Silent Night, Deadly Night, Jack Frost, Santa's Sleigh, all that stuff. So we really thought that let's start off in that genre, kind of see where it goes. And that's where it went.
Yeah. So now, with this coming out, basically, a month and 2 weeks, and that's it.
Yeah.
I see you're going to be probably marketing this big time. I mean, obviously, it's going to be on VOD, but are you going to go to conventions to promote it? Are you going to try to bring it to, not only promote it at conventions, but actually show it at conventions? What do you think you're going to do?
You know, there's no immediate plans for it, but we're always open for that. We did that with the Drive-In Horror Show. We did that with the web series, too. So we're open to anything. At the moment, we're mostly focusing digitally because it is digital, but anything's possible.
Now, let me ask you this. I know offline we discussed some stuff with a bunch of other people as we were talking about. If someone, say, was listening to this podcast or OTC or maybe your article in the Boston Phoenix or whatever, and they knew that you did these films, like if IFC or Shout Factory, someone came up to you and said, hey, we would love to take those two films and put them out there. Would you do that? I mean, is that something you guys would love to see?
Oh, no doubt. Absolutely. You know, we're starting on VOD because it fits us for right now, but, you know, the rights are all still available for DVD, Blu-ray, anything. I mean, the reality is that the market's kind of tricky right now, so it can be a tough thing to get into and really feel like it's worthwhile. But that said, we'd love to do it. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's cool. Now, let me ask you this.
Sure.
Now, for Drive-In Horror Show, were you ever interviewed by Fangoria or Dread Central or Outside the Cinema? I see them across the hall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were definitely interviewed in Fangoria. We were definitely got a lot of coverage on Fangoria's website. They reviewed the film and promoted us, and it was wonderful. Not Dread Central as much as I'm aware of, but we got some press on through Horror Hound, Remorgue, Outside the Cinema, of course, have me on a bunch, and promoted the hell out of our movie. They sponsored a screening of Drive-In Horror Show. So, yeah, the support from the horror community, be it, magazines or really huge websites, podcasts, anybody who puts anything together that's a fan to promote it, that's where we're all about.
Yeah.
That really helps us.
Nice. So yeah, anybody who else that maybe does a podcast or writes a blog or whatever that listens to this podcast, Dark Discussions, they should probably contact you because I'm sure, you've been very forward and getting out there and letting me have access to the films and see your work and whatnot, that other people probably do that. So yeah, they can meet you through Facebook, as we discussed.
Yep.
They can always contact me and I can get them to you.
No doubt.
And whatnot. So that's cool. Now, let me ask you this. After December 1st, are you willing to come back on Dark Discussions Podcast to discuss the Santa movie?
I would absolutely love to. Especially once it's out there and people have seen it and all that. Anything you want, man. Absolutely. And like you said, too, I mean, the people that, the people you brought up, anyone that's horror fans or websites, podcasts, that's our bread and butter. I mean, that's how we get these projects and films out. So absolutely anybody that wants to talk to us, review it, anything, by all means contact us. We're very accessible. And that's been the cornerstone of Drive-In Horror Show and how people have found out about that. That's going to be the cornerstone of this film. That's where it's at.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that do independent filmmaking, and here at Rocket Shot, there's a lot of authors, independent authors,
yep.
And that's the way they've been getting out their work is to do interviews, talk to other blogs and whatnot, and you guys, based off of what I've heard from my own experience with Drive-In Horror Show, I mean, anybody should definitely contact you to get you on, because it's good stuff.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Anything else you wanted to let folks know about?
Well, sure. I mean, you can definitely check out driveinhorrorshow.com to buy the film and also the comic book. We're doing the comic book released one page at a time, digitally, online, for the next year. Once a week until next October. So that's pretty exciting. You should check that out. You can get that at our Drive-In Horror Show website, too. We also do a filmmaker's blog on our website if you're interested in making your own film. And I've also done some writing for the Boston Phoenix alternative newspaper, which now, unfortunately, is no longer. And I've also written for some other horror publications, so you can check out my writing there, too. And then InfiniteSanta.com has all the info you need for the film, the web series. We have a music video from one of the tracks for the film. So go check that stuff out, man, and contact us through Facebook. Facebook's probably the best way. and we can be in touch.
Excellent. Thanks a lot, Mike. Appreciate it, and looking forward to the release of Santa, Infinite Santa, actually.
Yeah.
And that's only a month and a half, 2 weeks away, so that's kind of exciting. So.
Very exciting. Thanks so much, Bill. You're a big, big supporter of us.
No problem. Absolutely. Thanks, Mike.
The next interview is with Acid Bath Productions director, writer, editor James Balsamo, who actually has a number of movies that he's done, most famously 2012's slasher I Spill Your Guts. But I had a couple of minutes of the interview unfortunately get cut off due to battery problems with the recording instrument. So what we got is right when he discusses his films and what they're about. So nothing was missed except his name and the company. And that, once again, was James Balsamo, director and screenwriter and editor of a number of films for Acid Bath Productions.
So we'll talk about first, I Spill Your Guts, because I think that's the one that everybody knows. I mean, this is the one that you were part of big last year. We've talked about it on the podcast a couple times with me and with co-host Mike. And I know it's done pretty well. I've seen it, pictures, ads. They reviewed it on a lot of the horror websites. What do you folks know about that one first?
I Spill Your Guts is a revenge tale about two friends, Dennis and Joe. And Dennis takes a bullet for Joe in the throat. When he wakes up in the hospital, Joe tells him, "You know what, you're not going to make it, but don't worry, I'm going to take all the credit and leave you to die." But Dennis doesn't like that, and he doesn't die, so he comes back to Manhattan and kills everyone close to Joe. One little lie will cost so many innocent lives, and I spill your guts.
Now, that wasn't spoiled, right? I mean, if people come in, they get good kills, they got blood and boobs, they got everything a horror fan wants. Is it like a throwback to the 70s or 80s, or what would you call it?
Yeah, you know what, it is an homage to exploitation films, but it's a modern exploitation film, so we don't do any of those old grindhouse filters. You know, I think that's a little overdone in the industry. You know, not that it's not great, but Acid Bath Productions just wants to keep the flavor of old exploitation and bring it back to a newer generation.
Now, what made you get into the idea to write this movie specifically? Because it is a homage, yet you're updating it to the modern era. You know, like you said, you're not using the fake film to make it look old or whatever. Did you really get into these type of films when you were younger, or did it come to you now as you got older, or what?
No, I was raised on horror from a young age. I mean, as a kid, I had always wanted to be a slasher icon like Freddy or Jason, and so that's why I really wanted to make a slasher film and created The American Executioner.
Nice. Now, your other films, I know, like you said, there's one coming out in February, but before we get to that one, let's talk about the other two. You have the anthology, and you said Debbie Rochon stars in that, as well as a number of other people, Guar and so forth. Being your first film, I assume you purposely went for the short stories, and then you combined it into a feature-length film of, what, about an hour and a half or so, right? So, is it easy to do an anthology film because they're shorter, or a good way to start? I mean, even though we're talking your work, I'm sure there's a lot of young filmmakers out there that say, well, here's a guy that knows his film. What would you recommend? Would you start with the anthology?
I wouldn't actually start with an anthology. I mean, you know, you would think that it would be easier because it's shorter films put together, but it's actually more work because you're combining different cast members for each short story. So each short is essentially a separate film in its own, so you're combining all these separate films, so it's actually a lot more work than one person would think it would be.
Now, the anthology, is it like, what genres are each? I mean, obviously it's genre, but I mean, is it one a slasher, one a zombie, one a, you know, whatever, and is it, you get the blood and boobs, you get all the good stuff in that one too?
You get all the blood and boobs and all of Acid Bath Productions films, and that's one of the things that we've become known for, is the great gratuitous nudity, gore effects, and great cameos. So Hack Job has all of those things. Lloyd Kaufman, Lynn Lowry, Debbie Rochon, and Odorous Rungus from Guar star in Hack Job, and the first stories about Nazis that awaken a mummy's curse. That's called Tomb of the SS. The second story is more of a sci-fi spin. It's about an alien that crashes a battle of the bands and starts eating all the contestants. And Odorous Urungus from Gwar has to fight this 8-foot alien. We didn't use any CGI. It's all practical effects in that one. And then the last story is about a guy that gets possessed to kill televangelists. You'll never find out who possesses him unless you get your copy of Hack Job right now.
Now, we still have the third one I want to talk about, plus the one that's coming out in February. But since you just brought a good point up, first off, how much are your films? Where can they find them? Are they Amazon.com? Can they buy them directly from you? And if they did buy them directly from you, could they get them autographed by yourself, the director?
Yeah, actually all of the above. Our films are available on Amazon, Best Buy, Walmart just picked up Cool as Hell, and I Spill Your Guts. So our films can be purchased anywhere where major DVDs are sold. Also, you can buy them directly from me at acidbathproductions.com. I'd be happy to sign anything for anybody. Just send me a little note and an email.
What is your email?
AcidBathProductions@gmail.com.
Okay, so that's where they can go.
And that's right on the website.
Right on the website. Now, The Cool as Hell, you said that was also picked up by Best Buy. You can find it online and whatnot. What's that about?
Well, Cool as Hell is about two guys named Rich and Benny, and they're kind of like dorky comic book geeks that can't find any girlfriends. And so they befriend a demon named Az, and Az is trying to help them get laid throughout the movie. Except when Az came through the portal of hell, he left the gate open, and a soul-sucking beast came through and starts destroying Manhattan. And it leads an army of zombies to start taking over the world. So it's up to Rich and Benny and Az to take on this demon and send them back to hell and look good while doing it. And that movie has a talking snot in it named Bugar that's getting a lot of love out there. And it's got a super bong that never runs out of weed. It's really ridiculous, fun horror comedy.
Horror comedy, right. And would you call I Spill Your Guts and Hack Job horror comedies too? Or?
No, I Spill Your Guts is a straight slasher film. Hack Job is a horror comedy, though.
Is it? Okay. Now, your new film, and it's coming out in February, where are you guys going to be debuting it so people can maybe see it at a convention, maybe see you in person? Where would it be before it goes to, say, disc and whatnot?
Well, we haven't planned a screening yet. We're actually still in production of it, so I can't announce anything yet, but it will hit stores in February. So.
Nice. Now, where are you filming that? Is it going to be, is it filmed right in New York area? And so will it be a winter film, or is it going to be like...
It's a summer film. We shot actually most of it in the can, so
nice.
Just about done. We're shooting pickups and just about wrapped.
Nice.
Yeah.
Excellent. Now, what else do you want listeners to know about Acid Bath Productions, your films, and you specifically, like maybe location? I mean, you're here at Rock and Shock. You've been at other conventions, like I said, in other states. Where are you going to be? You can let folks know about that. Where are you going to show up? Or anything else that you think that is worth?
Well, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Acid Bath Product. You get all our films at acidbathproductions.com. And just check our sites for updates and follow us on Facebook. And I'll be all over the country this year, so I'm sure you'll see me sooner or later.
And they can find out all that information on AcidBathProductions.com. Now, the prices of the films, generally, what are they going for?
Well, in stores, they're retail, standard retail, $14.95. Yep. Here, we do a great convention deal. You get the T-shirt, the movie, and a chance to be killed in our new movie for $20, and that's a deal that you won't get anywhere unless you see us live. So. Come on down and see us. Check us out.
All right. Excellent, sir. Well, I appreciate it. And hopefully you do well here at the convention this weekend. And everybody should definitely check out your films, because I know my co-host, Mike, he thought The Spill of Your Guts was a damn good film, by the way. So.
Thanks. Appreciate
it. All right.
That.
Thank you. All right. At Rock and Shock with somebody. I want to introduce yourself.
Hi, my name's Chris Kukta. If you'd like to check out more of my work, you can look on www.horrorartist.com.
And you said work. People want to know what that is. What is it?
Well, I'm a classically trained fine artist that works in the horror genre. I do a lot of fantasy, science fiction, and horror paintings. Illustrate some comic book work, and in general, go to a lot of horror conventions.
Well, I'll say one thing.
work is really good, and we're talking stuff from the Phantom of the Opera, so the silent stuff, all the way to modern stuff that you've drawn many things here, and I've already spent some good money on you.
Oh, and I appreciate it.
But your stuff is really great. How did you get into this? So what made you decide to do horror instead of just anything?
When I was a kid, my grandmother bought me this crate of creepy, eerie, and Famous Masters of Filmland magazines, and I immediately, saw those things and just fell in love. I was like, that's what I want to do. In a roundabout way, I learned art. Basically went to school, went to American Academy of Art, went through art college, did freelance drawing and painting for a while. Then I started teaching, and I decided I would make a couple of paintings like the ones I saw when I was a kid again, you know? And my wife, we had them around the house for a long time, and my wife had seen them, and she was like, we should do something with these. And we went to our first horror convention, and it's been me doing this for the last 8 years ever since.
And you're out of Indiana, is it?
Yep.
Now, I notice you, even though you have horror stuff, and everything here is directly somehow related to horror, but I see that you have something like the Clash of the Titans, the Medusa. I mean, that's one of the more iconic ones. What made you decide which monsters to choose to do? Because, I mean, you have your Freddy Krueger's and you have your Frankenstein's from the Universal, but you did some cooler ones, too, that people wouldn't think of, like the Medusa.
Well, I was blessed when I was a kid to have an actual horror host. We had the son of Sven Gulli, Rich Coase, and he played so many horror films when I was a kid that I got probably a much deeper a deeper look at horror films in general and things that inspired me. I also read a lot as a kid, and classical science fiction and horror were part of my everyday life, and those are the things that influence me now, even to this day.
Nice. Now, what's some of your favorites? Because obviously you started with the Universal stuff, and we're all, you get your more modern stuff like Jason or whatever, but what was your favorite to draw here? Because your stuff is great. You got actual oil prints here that you're selling as well, the originals. What is your favorite?
My favorite probably is working with people or working on ones that where you really see the creative input. Hellraiser, the Salem's Lot piece that I've done. Those were some of my favorite pieces. I've got some work right now that's going to be pretty exciting. I'm doing a mix of 50s sci-fi, 70s drive-in, grindhouse movies, and even, some of my own personal work coming soon too. I'd like to do a run of movie posters of movies that never existed.
No, that's kind of cool. Now, I noticed a lot of them are prints, of the monsters or are seen in the movies. Have you ever thought of trying to, or even, I don't even know if you can do that, but do faux movie posters of these movies? So, for example, we have Freddy Krueger right here.
I've had some offers from people like that. There's a guy called Alternative Movie Posters. I've talked to him. There's a big market for that. People like Mondo, Tees, and some of the T-shirt companies have asked me some stuff. I'd love to do it whenever the money comes through. I'd love to try my hand at that. I'm open to anything.
Yeah, but but the way you're doing it now, you own.
Basically, yeah.
So you're not doing it for your own boss. Right?
One of my pet peeves is I try, on all my current paintings, I try to do something that nobody's ever seen. You gotta make them your own. Otherwise, it's the same tired images over and over again. And you've gotta almost reinvent the wheel when you're painting this stuff. And you can't fall back on the same kinds of things. People have seen it, And that's what I really want to focus on doing.
And I think you have, because, for example, we discussed Medusa from Clash of Titans. Someone just bought a Toby Hooper Salem's lot. I mean, you're doing the Howling. Most people, when they think of it, they just think of Freddy and Jason. But you're really expanding out from modern-day classics, never mind the old stuff. And now that you're saying you're going to probably do 1950s science fiction as well as some of the lesser-known grindhouse films, that's a kind of an excellent idea.
I would. One of my, some of my favorite films are Spanish, the Spanish horror films of the 70s, like Tombs of the Blind Dead.
Yeah,
another
one is
Paul Naschy films, the Filipino horror films, like the Eddie Romero stuff.
Yeah.
Those are magnificent. I'd love to see some of that, and nobody's done it, so I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do like a Beast of Blood Island and a lot of the deeper cuts that I really love. The problem is whenever I do something like that, it's almost like, man, there's about five guys that are going to buy this. But I don't care, you know. I think part of it is I got to paint for myself, too. You know, I think people just respond to the work.
Well, and you know what's funny is that, all right, you're going to have the general pop that's going to say, oh, I want that Freddy, and I want, or even maybe even the Clash of the Titan one. But there's going to be others that say, I got all that stuff already, so, I want that one. And, and that's a great idea that you're thinking
it
of
is.
Doing that.
And I'm blessed to be able to go to some of these shows where people really appreciate not the same plebeian horror films that, the populace likes. Not to say that those are bad. It's just that, they're very well-trodden ground. I think that, like I said, you really have to make it your own. And some of those other places, they're fertile for new stuff.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And like you said, the science fiction stuff. I mean, I would love to get that poster of them on a T-shirt or something.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of good stuff out there.
Them would be a good one. I'd really like to see a Hideous Sun Demon. I want to do a Hideous Sun Demon. I really want to do It, the Terror from Beyond Space. And I will do that this year. That's on the easel.
Yep.
There's a bunch of 50 sci-fi out there that are really, really amazing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. What's more, why don't you let folks know where they can find your stuff? Because even though your name is Chris, you've mentioned a website, too.
Yep, www.horrorartist.com is the main body of my work. You can contact me through there. By far and away, check out my Facebook page. I also have the Horror Art of Chris Kukta is part of... it has its own fan page. So I always show new work on that. And this is towards the end of my show season, so you're going to see a whole crop of new paintings pop up like right now. Starting with, I think, my next painting that's going to pop up is It. Pennywise the Clown.
Really? Nice, nice. The spell your name, it's
C-H-R-I-S-K-U-C-H-T-A.
Excellent. And I see a T-shirt that you're wearing is actually Tombs of the Blind Dead.
That's right, the VHS box, the old 1980s VHS box.
Right.
One of my favorite four horror films, the quadrilogy.
That's right. That's right. The seagull one. And,
right. There's Tombs of the Blind Dead, Return of the Blind Dead, The Ghost Galleon, and Night of the Seagulls.
That's right. Now, and you know you're a real horror fan when you said Spanish horror and not Italian, because everybody just thinks of Italian films.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I really love Italian, Argento and Fulci are big on my mind, but I'd like to see some Spanish guys get their love, especially Naschy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
He definitely deserves it. I think I'm going to do a couple more paintings. I already have one painting of Naschy that I really like, but I'm going to do another one.
Now, what you said, the Tombs of Blind Dead, you were about to tell me the other Spanish film. What was the name of it? Is it one of the Naschy films that you were thinking of doing?
Oh, I'm going to do another Tombs. I'm going to do another Horror Rises from the Tomb, possibly.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Maybe Hunchback of the Room.
That's a good
one.
That
movie is just out of control.
Yeah. My Productions or DVD is the one I have that.
Yeah, that's a really, really excellent movie.
Yep. Now, for those folks who don't know who
Paul Nash, he's basically the Christopher Lee of Spain.
He is. His real name was Jacinto Molina.
That's right.
And he was a kind of a grindhouse film star. He only made it as like a drive-in feature guy here, but over there he was a big star.
Yep, he sure was. And he just passed away last year.
Yes, he did. He has a street named after him over there.
Oh, does he? No,
yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right, so sounds good. Hopefully folks will check your website out and check your work out, because it's fantastic. I actually bought, I won't say how much I spent, but it was a good amount, and it's all for gifts
to the co-host. Much appreciated.
And thank you for putting out such damn good work.
Oh, thank you, man.
All
take
right,
care of yourself.
Thanks again for listening to Dark Discussions. Once again, Rock and Shark was a great time, and they were very hospitable as always. Looking forward to next year's, and hopefully it'll be as great as this year's. So, to wrap up this episode, you can reach us at www.darkdiscussions.com. That's the website for the podcast, and we have an email, darkdiscussions@aol.com. You can find us on Stitcher, on Facebook, on Twitter, and of course on iTunes. At the bottom of every page is a link to all these things. So next week we'll have another episode as always, and we'll talk to you then. Make sure you get onto iTunes, give us a review, and at the bottom of the review say we'd love to have you guys do an episode on blank, and we're going to randomly pick one of those iTunes reviews and do an episode on that topic. So until next week, talk to you then.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my love Notari in the castle east, to the master bedroom where the vampires feast, the ghouls all came from their humble abodes to catch a jolt from my electrodes.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash. The zombies were having fun. The party had just begun. The guests included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. The scene was rocking, oh, we're digging the sounds. He got on chains backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five. They played the monster mash.
The monster mash.
And it was a graveyard smash.
They played the mash.
It's caught on in a flash.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash.
Wow.
Out from his coffin, Drax's voice did ring.
Wow.
Seems he was troubled by just one thing.
Wow.
Opened the lid and shook his fist and said,
wow,
whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It's now a graveyard smash.
It's now the mash.
It's caught on in a flash.
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash.
Wow.
Now everything's cool, Drax a part of the band.
Wow.
And my monster mash is the hit of the land.
Wow.
For you, the living, this mash was meant to.
Wow.
When you get to my door, tell them Boris sent.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash. My graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on with a flash.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
Wow.
Mash.
Wow.
Easy, Igor, you impetuous young boy.
Wow.